Sunny day. Couldn't you guys be out there chasing fish or something, you know, or things with wings and fins? And but that's all right. Misery likes a little company, so if I got to sit up here too. So welcome to the, what's today, the November 14th meeting of the Fish and Wildlife Commission. And we have several items this morning and a full house of interested and concerned folks to hear from. So we will start off with open public input, and we only have three for that part of it. Most of you guys are on the sport fishing briefing. But just the rules of engagement on this, most of you are familiar with how this works. 3 minutes, and you'll hear a buzzer go off, and finish your thought within the 10 seconds or so. After 30 seconds, we push the eject button, and that's so we just want to make sure we have a lot of people, and we want to make sure we get everybody. So that's what the buzzer will be, 3 minutes. So I'm going to call you up two at a time, and then I'll start with Joe Verdoz and Sylvia Thorpe, please. Good to see you, Joe.
I'm the one who gave you the book. It's a good book, and don't want to be condescending about it. It's a great read. I challenge you to read 4 pages, and if you can't get into it after that, toss it. It's about local sustainable seafood. It's basically covers three species. It starts with oysters in New York before the Dutch came. Goes into shrimp. Worldwide farming of shrimp and local shrimp, and then sockeye, and finishes up in Bristol Bay. The reason I bring it is because I'm part of that network. I'm part of the network. I represent the Puget Sound Shrimp Association, and I'm a commercial fisherman. I've been here a few times. I included in there a pamphlet, not for self-aggrandization, but I ran for the Port Commission in Anacortes, successful. Got 64% of the vote. Probably demonstrated that I was a commercial fisherman, as you can see from the campaign thing inside, and it was well received by the community. Also, another commercial fisherman named Bobby Briscoe was on Port Commission of Port of Bellingham. Just to demonstrate, we're part of the community. Everybody should have a commercial fisherman next door to them to have an idea of where the food comes from. My larger point is, of course, is that Puget Sound is not just a revenue source for the state of Washington, but it's a working environment, and people's understanding and interactions with that environment are very important, and the commercial fishing is a very important part of that. As we look into climate change going in further into the future, possibly food problems, commercial fishing will continue to be very important into the future. That said, the last year for prawn fishing, we caught approximately 38% of the prawns, despite being set at 30% by the policy. This is the fourth year in a row that the recreational fishermen have not caught their quota. So we remain the beneficiaries of the charity, and I say charity because it's something that can be taken away at any time, which gives you a position of insecurity, which is not very good if you're a business person. So I don't have much more than that to say today. I wanted to bring you the book, and I hope you enjoy it. It's a well-documented book. The back third of it are actually documentation. It's very readable. Thank you.
The other book, Four Fish, is a book, too.
That is.
Richard Burgie and Sylvia.
Hi, good morning. Thank you all for letting me come here today. My name's Sylvia Thorpe, and I'm from Bellingham. I'm a tree farmer out there, and I don't represent any organization except myself. There's a whole bunch of chocolate chip cookies for y'all in the back. I didn't bake them because people don't like your cooties on their cookies, so I'll bring them to you in the break.
People from Bellingham are so nice.
Yes, we are, aren't we? Okay, so You got a whole bunch of stuff, and I would like you to see it. And first of all, I apologize because I did not know the legal procedure for requesting an emergency listing for a species. We do not do internet in my church, so I had no idea what it was until I had my IT guy open up all this stuff. So what you have, all this yaya stuff with mainly pictures and graphs and whatnot, is the scientific data to support the request that you list the lynx as endangered. What I'm doing now is going to show you, if you don't do nothing but eat the cookies and look at this piece of paper, here we go. Here's a picture of the lynx. It's not a bobcat. They're specialized. They live above 4,000 feet. They eat mainly snowshoe hare in the summer and the winter. Once the habitat for the hare goes, the lynx goes. We're in the southern portion of the range. The lynx was listed in 1993 as a state threatened species, and in the interim, we have seen only four lynx and only two kits and one female. The point here is no home, no food, no young, no lynx. And that, and the details are given here. The habitat is fragmented. The wildfires, I will show you this right now because it's all color and it tends to kind of wake you up. The wildfires, since 1994, when the lynx was listed in 1993, the wildfires have taken over 70% of the habitat. The best habitat was in the Okanagan. This is the Okanagan Lynx Management Units. I'm going to show you. If you would please look at your first page. This was done by Dr. Gary Kohler, who has been the lynx biologist until recently when Mr. Maletsky took over. You'll see at the bottom of the page it says 1994 to 2000. This whole green area is the lynx management analysis unit. In other words, where they live and where they've been documented and where they've been reproducing. If you look at the next page, second map, these are cumulative as you go across years, so it's kind of layered one on top of another on top of another. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not used to this stuff. 1994 to 2005, here we have more lynx habitat that's been lost. The Thunder Mountain Fire, which is above Totes Coulee and the Meadows, took 8,000 acres in one summer. The next, 1994 to 2010, you'll see there's more and more red. What this is destruction, hot fires, 100-year fuels burning. The lynx habitat, here's the last one. 1994 to 2015, now we've lost over 70% of the habitat. I only got just a few seconds. The lynx habitat's gone, lynx food, snowshoe hare is gone. No snowshoe hare, no lynx, no young. I would request that you please list the lynx as endangered. Here's a mama lynx and her kitten looking back at her. This was taken in Montana by Jim Jones, a photographer out of Marysville. This is the current picture of the Chelan Complex fire. You'll find a larger picture in your portfolio, and thank you very much.
Yeah. It's a little early in the morning to pick a fight.
Please.
But
I've been up since 3. I'm ready.
In the logging industry my entire grown-up life, and especially on the east side, you're from over here, but on the east side where I reside, we are badly, badly overstocked on all our forests. Granted, in the 70s, when I started logging, the industry was pushing all the decisions. It was overcut. There's no getting around that. I'm not going to deny that. When the pendulum swung, it went clean over to the other side. Now we cannot do any logging on Forest Service property.
That's correct, but on DNR you can.
Okay, but we're talking a lot of this is Forest Service property. So then we throw another endangered species in there, which we need to go in and do some treatments, ma'am, and I'm not an advocate. But that's what we run against. All of a sudden, we put another listed species in there, and then it just ties the industry's hands. How logging was done in the 70s as compared to today with all the modern machinery and tools that we have is night and day. It'd just be like comparing medicine of the 60s and 70s to the modern medicine we have today. So we got to be really careful when we start wanting to list species, because what you're advocating and you're pushing the fires, there's one way to take care of some of those fires is to get in there and do some fuel treatments, ma'am.
I agree with you.
Okay. Well, just so we're on the same...
Yeah, I'm a forester myself. I do logging, I do burning, and I do roading. And I've worked with the DNR and the Forest Service and the Wildlife Department to make a lynx habitat management notebook so we can cut and road and grow all at the same time. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Jay woke up, so I should wake up.
He wants to pick a fight. All right.
I was just going to say I appreciate your testimony, and we just actually was up at a workshop in Manning Park that John Rohr gave this presentation on the lynx habitat, and it is kind of scary how much of the habitat that they need has disappeared. I was also positive in the fact that some of these areas that are burned will return to excellent lynx habitat with time, but it's the time element that's tough. And so one of the things that they were talking about at this conference was the need to keep that source population in Canada still there. And so there's, lynx are trapped. There's no rules against trapping lynx in Canada. So one of the positive things that came of that conference that I heard was trying to buy out some of those licenses from trappers and say, don't take the lynx. Just let, take bobcat, take whatever, but we need that source population to come back and fill into habitat that in time, the fires actually have done some good things for lynx habitat, but it takes time for the species to come back and the
30,
vegetation.
30 to 40 years.
Right, that support the snowshoe hares that they need, but I appreciate your concern.
Thank you.
Well, I agree, Jay. There again, fire's a component of it, but we can still log and mimic what we need to do.
True. I agree with you.
We'll fight you on that.
Yeah, I wanted to respond to your mission here, your purpose here, which is to call for an emergency listing. In the 10 years I've been on the commission, we've never been faced with that question before, and I'm not sure what the process is.
It's outlined in the information that I gave you.
Okay.
It's the WAC 232-12-297. The process is all outlined for you.
Yeah, I would imagine, but I haven't read it, so... Deputy Director Storr, do you know what the emergency is there? What is it that we do when we're faced with a emergency? It's usually not a commission issue. It'd be for the director, right? Or what?
Thank you, Commissioner Wecker. The process is outlined as Sylvia laid out in the WAC. You've delegated the authority to the director, but that doesn't prevent the commission from taking an action on top of that or instead of that. I don't remember the criteria exactly, but it has to do with imminent danger, imminent threat, and on a widespread basis. But if we can look that up and talk about that.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
Ms. Thorpe, you're the type of person I would always want in my corner.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it.
Richard?
I may be out of order. I'm here for the sport fishing regulation testimony. Did I get put in the wrong place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that's next. Until after the next presentation.
Yeah, that's down the road, like an hour and 40
okay.
minutes.
Thank you.
And I'm going to take this opportunity because we do have so many folks that do want to provide good input for the sport fishing. If you could consolidate your comments, if possible, because I think, repetition's fine to a degree, but, hearing the same thing 5 times is one thing, but 50 times. So if you can just kind of crunch them together, we'll all be able to be a little bit more comfortable in a quite crowded room.
Yeah.
So with that, we're done with the open public general.